You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Tuesday, February 23rd. This is The Christian Commute. I'm your host, Seth Dunn, and you are riding home with me in the broad daylight. I'm hoping I can get home in time to pitch my kids some baseball because I've signed all three of them up for Little League, even the girls, even the girl who likes dancing and music and is kind of a fancy pants. Well, she doesn't really wear pants. She wears dresses all the time. So I'm very happy about getting her athletically involved. My wife's family, they're not athlete people. They're like music people, art people. And, you know, that's okay if you, as long as you want to have a gorgeous daughter for me to marry. But when I start making kids with them, I'll tell you, the Duns are sports people. Although I wish I could play an instrument. Because if I could play an instrument, there'd be no more Hillsong. I would solve the problem myself. Anyway, I'm going to get home and throw them some baseballs. Here in the Kia Soul. Studio D again. I'm trying to figure out how to get some air conditioner on because it's hot. Last Tuesday, I was in snow flurries. This week I'm turning my air conditioner on, the Kia Soul, riding home on the Christian Commute. Oh man, I gotta find what I did with my sunglasses. The day I moved, I misplaced them, so now the sun's in my eyes all the time. I might just go to the store and buy some cheap $10 sunglasses until I find my good ones. I like to wear aviators, as you guys know. I think I look cool in aviators. See here, I have a full show for you today on the Christian Commute. Today's show title is Discerning and Drinking. Discerning and Drinking, but it's not about drinking. It's not about alcohol. It's not about that kind of drinking. Metaphorical. Alright, let's see here. What else? I have a question in the inbox about leading your church away from its denominational commitments. I mean, it didn't really have to be denominational commitments. Any sort of commitment. And really, I think the show topic kind of relates. Do I have enough gas to get home? I have a quarter tank. I think I can make it. And I think I'm going to be driving a different car home, different car to work tomorrow. This one's going to be out of gas when I get there. That's the thing about small cars. They're easy to park. But they run out of gas because the gas tank isn't that big. By the way, Kia Soul, by the way, By the way, enunciate, Seth. You're on a podcast. You're communicating with words. Enunciate. By the way, Kia Soul does not get very good gas mileage. 23, 24 miles a gallon. Let's get to today's scripture. Let's get to today's Bible chapter review. We're in Mark chapter 14, verses 63 through 65. So the high priest has just asked Jesus, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" And he says, "I am, Ami," in the Greek, "I am." Now, I don't know if Jesus was trying to draw this connection, because I am is God's name, I am. He's like, "I am." He didn't say yes, he said, "I am." And then he quoted Daniel, "You'll see the Son of Man, on the one like a Son of Man, on the right hand of power." He said, "Yup, I'm the Son of God." The high priest tears his clothes, because back in that day, that's how they expressed outrage. They tear their clothes. Tears his clothes. He clutched his pearls. He tore his clothes. And he said, "What further need do we have of witnesses? You have heard the blasphemy. How does it seem to you?" So by Jesus saying that he was the Messiah and the Son of God, he had blasphemed in the high priest's eyes. Now listen, that there was going to be a Messiah was not a point of controversy. It would not be blasphemy to say, "I'm the Messiah," if you really were the Messiah. But blasphemy is a sin against God. blasphemy is saying something untrue about God. So it's blasphemy to say I am God. It's always blasphemy to say I am God. It's not necessarily blasphemy to say I am the Messiah, except in this little special case we have of Jesus, because he's the God-man. He really is God. The rest of us aren't. But the high priest is rejecting Jesus as the Messiah, and he's saying, this is blasphemy to say you're the Son of God, because Jesus is equating himself with God, which amounts to blasphemy. Now, if any of us, listeners, said, I am the Son of God, it would be blasphemy. It would be. So we can almost be sort of sympathetic with the high priest and his kangaroo court here. Because if anybody else had said that, it would be blasphemy. But it's not blasphemy for Jesus, because it's true. But the high priest doesn't believe in Jesus. So there's an outrage, there's an uproar. And they all, the Bible says, they all condemned him of deserving death. And then they spit on him and they beat him. They're absolutely disgusted with him. He's a blasphemer. He's lower than low. We're going to beat him with our fists. We're going to spit on him. They blindfolded him and they mocked him while they were beating him. He said, prophesy. Prophesy. Boom, we're going to beat you. Prophesy now. Prophet, prophesy now. Blasphemer. So now, the going has officially gotten tough, and Lord willing, tomorrow we're going to see how Peter reacts. You know, Mike Tyson has famously said, everybody's got a plan till they get punched in the face. And we've seen Peter say, Lord, I'm not going to deny you, no way. And Jesus got arrested, and Peter followed him. But now punches are being thrown. We'll see what happens next on the Bible Chapter Review, Lord willing, tomorrow, as we continue in Mark chapter 14. For now, let's go to the inbox. Do you have a question about Christian theology or apologetics? You can write to SethDunn88@gmail.com, SethDunn88@gmail.com, or dial 470-315-0875. Jeff from Florida writes in, he says, how do we wisely approach the idea of encouraging our church to leave the denomination or stop giving to the cooperative program? And I actually already wrote Jeff back, because this was a real deal going on with him. And there was a representative from the Baptist Convention of his state, the Florida Baptist Convention, coming down to cheerlead for the CP in the face of his church considering their association of sponsorship of Southern Baptist Causes. And Jeff says, you know, what do you think I should do, Seth? What's some advice from you? So here's one of these things. I'm going to give you my advice. I don't know what it's worth, because I've tried to do this in a church before. I've tried to get Rolling Springs to do it, the Demonic Church of Freemasonry, and they wouldn't do it. And I, even if I had not gotten in trouble for the Freemasonry thing, and even though Roland Springs is full of contemporary people, the pastor did not like it when they had the conservative people. The pastor did not like it when they had the MLK 50 conference. I mean, there's not a lot of Russell Moore fans in the pews of Roland Springs. But that guy was such a denominational homer company man, he wasn't going to change anything. So I've tried and failed. I've stood up in the meeting and said, I move that we stop giving to the cooperative program. So, Jeff, I don't know what help I can give you. I've tried and failed in one church. I currently attend another church that gives to the cooperative program, but I don't get in their business. I just show up on Sunday and Wednesday. Now, I'm a member of a church that just stopped giving to the cooperative program. I didn't have to do a thing, because Pastor Jordan Hall and the people up there, Brother Jordan, had enough sense to stop giving. So I can try to give you my advice, but I've never successfully done this. And I am not an expert in getting groups of people to do things. I'm a theologian. I'm an apologist. Like, I have a master's in that. If you send me a question about apologetics, I will give you the answer. If you send me a question about accounting, I have a master's in that. I'm a CPA. I will give you the answer. Now you're asking me for my opinion on how I think you should do something. And I'll do my best because, you know, I've got some experience with this and making these analyses. So the first thing is to recognize the opponents for who they are. So if you're in your church meeting and you have a fellow church member who's unsure or opposed outright, if he thinks the church should stop being members of the Southern Baptist Convention, or if he thinks that, or a member of the Southern Baptist Convention, or if he thinks the church shouldn't stop giving to the CB, he has legitimate concern because, well, they've always done that, and it seemed good at the time that they decided to do it, and there's positive benefits, and he doesn't understand why. He's not convinced. He's different than the guy who's coming in from the denomination. So your church member, he could be an objective pew-sitting church member. And in his mind, his job is to do what's best for the kingdom. And what he does for a living, you know, he could be the lineman for the county who walks the main line. You know, he could just be some regular guy. You know, he could be somebody George Strait sings about shift work. You know, just one of these normal workaday 9-to-5 dudes, like you and me, Jeff, just a regular guy. And he's at the church meeting because he cares about the kingdom. Whereas the representative from the denomination, or it could be the local association guy or the state association guy, the guy who's there from the denomination, he's not objective. He's there like a sales account representative, and it's his job not to lose the account. So think of it this way. If you have quality problems with a vendor at work and they keep giving you bad product, and Jeff, I think you're in healthcare, if you keep getting bad latex gloves from this supplier, they keep ripping, and you're going to start ordering latex gloves from somebody new, the guy who comes to you from the glove company to try to keep your business is not interested in you keeping your hands clean. He's interested in keeping your business. So he's going to say whatever it takes to downplay the problems and assure you that things will get better. He's only there because there's a quality problem. But it's the same thing with the representative you have, Jeff, in your church at the Florida Baptist Convention. He's there because now people have questions and people have problems with NAM and Russell Moore and Karen Swallow Pryor and the Kingdom Diversity Department and Ronnie Floyd, you name them, and they're tired of it. And he's there because he's going to not lose the account. He's like, you know what, you guys have some legitimate concerns, but the CP, we've been millions, we've saved this many souls, and we've done all this. His job is not to go there and say, guys, you're right. It's a waste of money. You don't have to send this money. We're not managing it well. He's not going to be objective and say that. He's going to keep the account. You can't trust him. He's your adversary. Your fellow church member who has a different opinion than you, he's your brother, and y'all have the same goal, you just have a difference of opinion. So one guy you need to work with and one guy you need to recognize as an enemy and shut down. Recognize the people and the motives for what they are. And just be very objective and very factual, and try to find in the time you have to give a speech, which is sometimes 2 minutes or 5 minutes, and say something to hit home with people. What I would say is something like this. Guys, we all grew up with Kodak cameras, and I can remember going on vacation, and then when I was little, and taking pictures, and after we get back, we'd go to Wolf Camera and Video in the mall, and we'd get our film developed, and then we'd go home and look at our pictures, and we'd keep them in an album, and we thought it was great. And I remember taking those pictures. I remember posing for the pictures and looking at them and cherishing that time that I had. And I thought it was so cool to go to Wolf Camera. And then you ask somebody, when's the last time any of y'all bought a Kodak camera? And when's the last time y'all went to Wolf Camera and Video? Our expertise is free. Or when's the last time you went to the mall? So we used to do that all the time. But now we don't. Why? Because we all take pictures on our cell phones, and we all store them on the cloud, and our albums are on Facebook now. Somebody at Kodak said, we've always done it this way. We make film cameras, and that's what we've always done. And by the time they moved to digital, it was too late. And they got beaten out by Sony and Nikon and these companies that are still around that make digital cameras. Kodak's gone because we had always done it this way mentality. Something was good in the 1920s, and it's not good now. Guys, the cooperative program was good in the 1920s, but it's not good now. And it's led to some very negative things. And if we just ignore them, they'll get worse. It's time to change, and it's time to act. And what you're working on here, Jeff, is something called psychological overcommitment. People who have done something in the past don't want to stop doing it because at some point they have to admit that they've made a mistake. That's how people marry ugly girlfriends. Not necessarily ugly, because why would you ask her out in the first place if she was ugly? But ugly on the inside. And when you've been married for a long time, you figure out it's more important to be good looking on the inside than it is on the outside. Not that it hurts to be good looking. So I would try to say something like that. I would stick to the facts. I would say our church values this. This is what the denomination does with our money. Our church values this. This is what the denomination does with our money. To stir the people towards a change. And I'd be adversarial where I need to be adversarial and cooperative where I need to be cooperative. So that's my advice. Not that I've ever done it. And with that, let's go to today's show titled Discerning and Drinking. And this is, again, it's not about drinking alcohol. Remember the old phrase, the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And we all know what that means. You can lead somebody to know what the right decision is. You can explain the situation, but they have to do it. They have to act. It's like what I said yesterday. You can't get saved for your kids or your wife or your mom and dad. You can't walk the aisle for them and get down on your knees and pray the sinner's prayer. You know, they have to do that. By the way, that's not how you get saved. And I don't advocate aisle walking, repeating prayers. Just making a point. So, think of all the discernment work that I've done over the past few years at Pulpit and Pen, or that I've done on this podcast, or that Jeff Maples, or Jordan Hall, or Dustin Germain, or Chris Roseborough, or now the guys at Discern, that website, or all these people who are working on this and saying, guys, we got to do better. And think of what Daryl Harrison and Virgil Walker have done. I'm looking forward to listening to their 3.5-hour episode of their podcast, Just Thinking on Critical Race Theory. So think about all the work these people have done to discern the truth. And eventually everyone discerns the truth for himself. But it doesn't mean he's going to act. He's going to come to that water as the horse looked down and think, well, now I've got a drink. Let me just give you an example from my life. Years and years ago, this would have been, my gosh, 9 years ago, I joined First Baptist Church in Woodstock. Both me and my wife did. And when we did, we were gung-ho about it. We thought it was great. We thought our Sunday school class was great. We thought the preaching was great. We thought the church was great. I remember going there and pulling up to the parking lot. I was like, man, this parking lot's huge. I don't want to walk all this way. And a little trolley with Moses painted on it pulls up. And I was like, oh, they got trolleys. And we really liked the people we met in our Sunday school class. And they were super friendly. And it was a friend of my wife. Her name was Laura Barron, who invited my wife to church. And we went. Because we had some frustrations with our local church. Sort of that. I've talked about those before on the show. And those of you who've been listening for past 5 years know what they are. I'm not going to rehash them. But I remember the first time I walked into the second service at Woodstock. They had two services there. They had the early service and the late service. And the younger people went to Sunday school, and then they went to the late service. And the older people went to the early service and then went to Sunday school. And that's typical of a lot of churches. And I'd never been in the first service before, but the second service, I walked into the building, and it was very similar. They called it the chapel. It was their old worship building that they had before they built what I call the Johnny Dome, which is like a giant theater, almost Osteen-like of how big it is. And it was very similar to the church I grew up in and how the pews and balcony were designed. But it was something weird. They had a fog machine. I remember walking by a fog machine, and I'd never been in a fog machine area before. It's something you'd have at a concert, but I go to Bob Dylan and Pearl Jam concerts. They don't have fog machines there. Bob Dylan ain't using a fog machine. Eddie Vedder ain't using a fog machine. And I thought, well, this is, something's not right about this. But you know what? I just ignored it. I was like, well, okay. I don't know why they have a fog machine. That's a little much. But everything I've heard listening to the preaching podcast has been fine. I've listened to, 50 sermons of this guy. He was the SBC president. We've had a good experience. This is fine. We kept going there, and we joined. And then we got to know the people in our Sunday school group, what they call a care group. And then, we'd have events where you'd go over to the person's houses for little parties and stuff like that. Laura Barron's husband, Dax, visited me while I was in the hospital when I had a complicated migraine that they thought was a stroke. And, we got to know the lady in the nursery where we leave our kids off with. It becomes part of our routine, and these people become part of our lives. I'm on the church softball team. And then when the arrogant cater thing happened, I could not stand it anymore. And I realized, man, this place is more like a cult for Johnny Hunt than a New Testament Church of God. And I'm leaving. And in leaving, I'm going to leave a bunch of people who know exactly what I know. That they should have looked at the fog machine and turned the other way. That they should have looked at the trolley and said they're copying Disney World. And they're copying Disney World on purpose. I have a book from seminary where it tells you how to copy Disney World and paint up your trolley like that. I have a book. But they kind of ignored it, and they're like, well, this is where I've planted myself in my life. All my friends and routines are here. I'm not going to leave. And I told people while I was leaving, and some of them left, and some of them didn't. Most of them stayed. But I will say this, I know a guy, his name is still my friend to this day. He moved to Georgia from Ohio just so he could go to First Baptist Woodstock to be under the preaching of Johnny Hunt. He wanted to be a licensed preacher and evangelist, and he left. And I'm still friends with him to this day. And we're not in the same Sunday school care group anymore. We hardly, he lives in another state. We hardly see each other. But I can still call that guy, and he can still call me. Because our friendship was built around Christ and not around our church activity. You'd think building your friendship around Christ and the church activity would be one and the same, but it's really not, guys. It's really not. But there was a lot of people that day, and some of them were ignorant and just didn't want to listen. But I guarantee you some of them knew, and they just, I've discerned it, but I'm not going to do anything about it. And you get to a situation like Jeff Lopez has, where he's trying to get the cooperative program out of his church. Everybody's not an idiot. Anybody who sees what's going on can discern eventually, we're getting ripped off by the Southern Baptist Convention. But some people, they're just not going to want to take the action to change. They're just in it. And I've given two very specific examples, but I can go on and on. The church I went to after I left First Baptist Woodstock, Expedition Church in Cartersville. I was friends with him. He was one of my best friends, the pastor. And I volunteered there on Wednesday nights teaching the youth. I preached in the pulpit a couple times, and he let me do that to help with my seminary work. I ate lunch with that guy every week. He was mentoring me. And then he put a Roman Catholic in the pulpit, and he wouldn't correct it. Gone. And that was a small church where you really know everybody. I'm gone. But some people can't do that. Some people just think something's wrong, but I'm not going to do anything about it. And I liken it, and you'll have to forgive me for this extreme example, to being an abusive relationship. If you're a wife and you've got a husband, he's got a big house and a good job, you've got a couple kids, they go to a nice private school, you're a member of the country club, but your husband drinks too much every once in a while, he might slap you around a little bit, And, you know, sometimes he cheats on you, and you know it. But you've got all these other good things going on in your life. You've got a limitless, nearly limitless balance on your credit card. Maybe you got a little nanny. You got a nice Toyota Sequoia or Infiniti Q45 mom car. You live in a nice big house. 90% of your life is great, but you just have these little marital problems. You'd rather not help them or have them, but if you leave them, you leave all the rest of the stuff. And I think that's why a lot of people stay in abusive relationships. Like, the price of getting punched in the face is I get this big house and my kids get to go to private school. And, you know, I only get slapped in the face once or twice a month. You know, he only cheats on me every few months or so. And it's a risk versus return thing, a risk versus reward, maybe. To do the right thing, I have to do something unpleasant. And that unpleasant thing I'm going to have to do, I can't do it. Now, that's an extreme and very unfortunate example. But think about people who maybe they're in a Pentecostal church. Maybe they're in Mormonism or something crazy like that. Even worse, they're in a cult. And they realize that a lot of their church stuff is a bunch of bull. It's a bunch of bull crap. But they stay in it because it's hard to leave. It's hard to change. People naturally don't want to change, especially if they're ensconced. And cult, not only do cult leaders know this, but leaders of the SBC are ripping you off. Know this, that, you. They know you don't want to change. They know you don't want to lose all your friends. So when you discern things, it's up to you to drink. And sometimes you're going to drink the water, but you can't make all your friends who've discerned it or who you've informed to do the same thing. And you have to be okay with that. Guys, you can listen to this show every day. And you can listen to expository preaching every Sunday. You can read my Beth Moore book, and then you can go to your church. And no matter what you say, your women's ministry is going to do the next Beth Moore or Priscilla Shirer study that comes from LifeWing, because it's just what they do. And one day you're going to have to say, I'm not going to do it. I quit. I leave. And a bunch of people are not going to go with you. Sometimes you just have to go off by yourself. When you do the right thing, sometimes you do the right thing alone. And I'm going to tell you guys, discerning is way easier than drinking. Some people think, oh man, these discernment guys, they've got it all figured out. I don't know, we just look at the information. You can look at it too. It becomes emotional. What's really hard to act and do the right thing. Knowing the right thing and doing the right thing are two different things, and I have to tell you, it's way easier to know. And it's up to you to do it. You can't make anybody else do it. All you can do is help them see. So that's discerning and drinking. And with that, I'll be kind to John in Canada and do a shorter show. I'll end it right now. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. 27 minutes, John. Less than 30. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.